2G. Just go to Jesus now. I know he's the one.
He's the one.
I know
he's the only one.
Go to Jesus now.
Hello, everybody. I want to welcome you to the Raw Spiel, where we keep it real with the hard truth. I am very happy to have a special guest here. His name is Mr. Benny Tolman. He has an interesting story. I can't wait for him to get started with it. He seemed to have passed away. He was clinically dead for almost an hour. And so he had a journey to heaven, and he's here to, that's pretty much it. He's here to tell us about it. And Mr. Benny, thank you for taking the time to come on the broadcast and share your story with us.
Well, I appreciate the opportunity. I feel blessed to be here and blessed to be on my second round with life. Because I
all right.
I did have the whole experience.
Yes, sir. He has a book out. Before your near death experience, now you have a book I call the light after death. Before your experience, were you a believer in Christ before you had this near-death experience?
Yeah, I was. So I've been essentially born into the Christian fold since I was, raised in church. And so I was very much Christian before my experience, and my experience just solidified that for me.
Yes, sir. I tell you, So kind of, I'll tell you, this kind of story here, you need like an hour and a half to 2 hours, but we see what we can squeeze in the next 55 minutes here. So could you lead us to what led you to this state to be clinically dead for almost an hour? What was the, I see you took some kind of supplement that brought this on?
I did. So back then, this was back in 2003, so a buddy of mine and myself, we both were kind of amateur bodybuilders, so we were taking, all sorts of vitamins and supplements to help build our bodies naturally, and there was one supplement specifically out there back then that would help your muscle recovery happen much quicker than naturally, and so we were buying this at all the different vitamin shops, in the mall, the strip mall. Even at some of the grocery stores had this stuff, but it was so popular, it was sold out everywhere. So we turned online, and you remember back in 2003, there was a lot of, broad websites all over the world plugged in on the net. And so we found a site in Thailand that had the same supplement and was the same price as the stuff we'd get in the States. So we ordered it, took a couple of weeks to come. And when it came, we were excited. We were going to go do a workout on a Saturday morning. And then go have a kind of a fun day after the workout. So we were going to each take our little dose, which is one little bottle cap of this liquid supplement. And we each took our bottle cap. And within minutes, within a minute or two, we both felt something was very off or wrong with this version of the supplement, with the Thailand version. And, come to find out later, we found out that the Thailand version was 100% strength, and the American version was a 5% strength. So it was tantamount to taking 20 bottle caps worth, not one bottle cap worth. So it was extremely toxic for us, and the human system was not built to take that much. So we both started having some shutdowns right away. We didn't realize that's what was going on, but we knew we were feeling sick, so we decided, hey, let's go get something to eat, and maybe that'll make us feel better. How you eat something bad, maybe eat something good, and it'll make you feel better. So We went about a few blocks down the street to a little restaurant, a little restaurant chain. He was almost, you know, falling asleep, kind of going unconscious as he was driving, and I was like shaking him, keeping him awake. We pulled into the parking lot, and I knew I was about to kind of lose my stomach, so I was running for the bathroom, and it was a little one-seater bathroom, so I went in and locked the door. And as soon as I got in there, I started feeling dizzy. And as I was standing, you know, kind of swaying over the toilet, the whole world just kind of spun. And then it was just black for a few moments. I could only see darkness. And then from that darkness, I started coming to aware that I was sitting what felt like in a theater, and I was watching a movie. And now all of a sudden I was watching this scene of this dead guy on the ground. And in no moment did I even think that, hey, that's me. I didn't even think of it at all, because me was up here, you know, in this kind of theater and watching this movie. And meanwhile, my buddy, he went in the restaurant, collapsed on one of the booths and started to throw up. So they called 911 and got him hauled away. Meanwhile, I'm in the bathroom doing the same thing, but I'm on my back. And so I aspirated, and that's what ended up, you know, separating me essentially from my body while I was watching all this happen. And it was quite weird. I saw them take my buddy away, but it didn't even dawn on me that it was him, my buddy. I thought I was watching some weird movie, that they were shooting the movie from the ceiling down. And so I watched them haul him away, and I watched one of the patrons of the restaurant. I kept trying to use the bathroom, kept trying to open that door. Finally, after about three or four times, he went and got the manager, and the manager, you know, opened the door and saw a dead guy sitting on the, you know, laying on the ground. And that, so they called 911 again and got an ambulance there. And the medics, these two veteran medics and one rookie medic on his first week on the job, these three medics came on scene. They diagnosed me DOA. So they recorded body temperature. They did attempt some CPR and a mask over my face with some breath, but nothing came. I was, they recorded a body temperature of 79 degrees. So they figured the body was dead for a bit. They guesstimated at least 30 to 45 minutes by the time they found me, at least, if not longer. It could have been an hour. So they went ahead and processed me, put me in a body bag, and I watched them load the body on a gurney and strap it down and strap the way you strap a dead body, not a live body. And there's just tight straps around the neck, the chest, the hips, the legs. And they put the body in the back of an ambulance, and they waited around for a police officer to sign some paperwork. And they waited a good, you know, 15, 20 minutes for him. And then they started pulling away from the scene. Meanwhile, this whole time, I can actually hear, like, the thoughts of everybody. I can hear their thoughts. I can feel their emotions. I can even, even when they were hearing other people's voices in their head, I could hear those other voices they were hearing. And it was just such an odd experience. And I kept thinking, this is so weird for this producer or director, whoever's shooting this movie, why they're doing all this, where I can hear everyone's thoughts. It was just very weird to me. And I was thinking very outside the experience, like I was just a viewer, not a participant. And it was just very, very weird and awkward, you know? And as this is happening and I'm watching this body get taken away from the scene and I'm going with it, I'm literally looking down and watching it all go with me. As I did, though, I saw this rookie medic, and it was really affecting him. This is his first week on the job, and now he's got his first dead body, and the other medics called it a stiff. They were like, you got your first stiff, you know? And he's like, I can't believe that we're not even going to try anything. You know, we barely tried and we pronounced him dead. And it was because the veteran medics knew, you know, I was dead. And so he was feeling really bad about this. As he did that, though, he started to glow. And it's very weird for me to say this, because this doesn't happen, you know, in our third dimensional world that we live in, but it does happen. We just don't see it necessarily. He literally started to glow in his heart area. And then I felt this force, this very strong force, go over my left shoulder, and I felt it like connect to him. And I heard a very loud voice say, "This one's not dead." And he heard it too. He heard it. He looked around. He was thinking maybe it was the veteran medics playing a joke on him. And so he looked over at him and he realized it wasn't them. And he was looking around. He knew it wasn't the body. And so he kind of shrugged it off. I must have imagined it. And they went about another block down the street. And the light that was glowing around his heart area, it started to expand. And it went bigger, and it went bigger and bigger and bigger until it was glowing above his head and glowing all the way down to his waist. And it was getting brighter as that light was glowing. And then I felt that force again, but even stronger the second time. It went over my left shoulder, and bam, I heard it even louder, straight to him saying, "This one's not dead." And that was enough for him. After that second time he heard it, he decided, "I have to do something." So the first thing he did is he started to unzip the body bag, and it ended up hitting the strap that was around the neck area. So he had to kind of loosen or let go of that strap, and he undid the body bag even further, and then he started feeling around in the neck area. And now, mind you, the body had just vomit all over it. The body didn't look like me, by the way, because in the process of dying, the body's neck had gone almost wider than my jaw. So it didn't look human to me anymore. So he's feeling around this. It's not a pleasant thing. It's actually kind of disgusting that he's doing this, but he knows that he's got to take action of what he just felt. So he continues to do that and feel around. He couldn't feel any pulse. I was actually starting to get stiff at this point, and he felt like the chest muscles felt hard, like the muscles were actually starting to go into rigor mortis. And he said, "You know, I got it." He felt this urge, this urgency coming from that energy, that light that had come to him. So then he went inside the armpit to try to feel for a pulse. He didn't feel anything there either, but he felt, from his training that he had just recently completed, he knew to check in the thigh area as well. So he undid another strap on the chest. He loosened the waist strap, unzipped the body bag even further, and went down into the inside thigh to the femoral or femoral artery, the big artery in the leg. And he pushed really hard on that, where that artery would be. But when he did that, when he made contact with my femur bone, like he pushed down hard enough that he came in contact with the femur bone, when he did that, I felt an ignition, like a spark, literally like an electrical spark from me, where I was sitting up here in this, like, almost like a theater setting watching this movie. I felt a spark hit me, and I know it, I felt it hit him too. At this point was the first moment I was kind of getting an idea that something odd is really going on here. I'm not just a spectator in a movie theater. This is very interactive. That was enough for him, though. That spark was enough for him that he was going to do his best to the training he had received to try to bring my body back. So he did, completely open up the body bag wide enough that he could clean up the chest area. And he had to cut the shirt off and actually do some diodes on the chest for a defibrillator. He hooked it up. And when you hook up a defibrillator, it makes this alarm before it actually shocks the body. And until now, the two veteran medics had no idea what this guy was doing. They were kind of off in their own little world talking. And all of a sudden, the defibrillator alarm goes off, and they both look back, and oh, man, they started going after him. They started chewing him out, saying, "You're going to get fired. This guy's dead. You got to know when to let go. You got to, you can't bring back dead people." And they were just going off on him. He didn't care. He kept with it. He let the defib shock, and when it happened, there was no heartbeat. But he still didn't get dissuaded. He went ahead and went for a second round of shocks. And in the middle of his two veteran medics making fun of him, telling him he's an idiot, that second shock came, and there was a single heartbeat. And then it was flatline again. But that was enough that the two veteran medics shut up right then. And they're like, "Whoa, wait a second, what's going on here?" And on the third round, he got right away, right after the third shock, it was just steady. It was a faint heartbeat, but it was steady. And it was like a very steady, faint heartbeat continuing to go on its own. And when that happened, you know, as God makes these miracles work, I happened to be literally one block away from a trauma center that specialized in cardiology. And so I was literally one block away from a really good hospital that was fairly brand new. And so they radioed ahead, and, you know, within seconds, literally seconds after my heart started, I had a trauma team there to meet the body and start trying to revive the whole body, get the whole thing back, you know, working like a normal body should. And, you know, meanwhile, I'm again up here watching everything above, and I still don't know it's me. I still don't know it, because me again is up here watching, not down there. And so I'm participating as a viewer still. I'm really involved with this story, though. I watched this body come back alive, and that was amazing to me. And I'm very much into the emotions of what this rookie medic is feeling, and the thoughts that are going through his head that I could hear. And they transfer the body over. As they do, the body starts to go into seizures, and it starts foaming at the mouth, and the jaw was rattling as it was seizing. And so they had to, as they put the body into the hospital bed, the hospital gurney, they had to actually strap the arms and the legs down so they could actually work on the body, because the body was in such seizures. So they did that. As they did that, they got the leg straps on, no problem. They got the right arm strap on, no problem. And then as they did the left arm, I'm left-handed, I felt someone strapping my arm in my seat where I'm sitting watching all this. I felt someone strapping my arm. And I looked down to where my arm would be, and I saw what looked like my arm, and I resisted. I resisted what was pulling my arm away, and I resisted so much. As I was resisting, I looked down to see what was going on with that body, and I saw the body resisting the exact same way, and then I saw the body tear the strap. It actually tore the strap off of the bed. And that was the first moment, the first reckoning that what I was watching was me. I had no idea until this point, no idea. And now that I saw like almost this puppeteer type relationship between me up here and that body down there, that was the first inkling I had that it was me. And I have a good, strong, self-judgmental voice in my own head. And I could hear my own voice saying, "You idiot. This has been you the whole time. You've been dead this whole time. You didn't even know." And I felt like this very mean voice inside of me. It was a part of who I was, you know, here on Earth. We all have that kind of ego voice inside of us. And that ego voice was just tearing me up, saying, "You're such an idiot. How could you not know that was you? You've been watching yourself dead for over an hour at least," you know, and just tearing me up. And as I was thinking these like negative thoughts, all of a sudden I started to feel the gravity of all the bad things I'd ever done in my whole life. It felt like I was starting to get smothered. You know, we're all human. And I did a lot of good things in my life, but I did normal, stupid stuff too, you know, and I started feeling the ramification, the gravity of all these negative things that I ever did. And it felt like it was starting to put me out, like to actually take me away from existence, to squish me. And I felt all this pressure and pressure, and all of a sudden this warmth started to warm me from behind and to almost push away all these negative thoughts and fears. I started to feel all the good I did in my life, all the difference I was able to make and the good things I did in my life. And then I felt I got to the end of the best I ever did, and then I was getting even more of this warmth and more of this love that was coming from behind me, of all places. And so much so that I turned around, I literally turned like my countenance around from what I was watching with that body. I turned around to see where this warmth, where this light was coming from. And I saw a man there. I saw this man all dressed in white. He had a white beard and very, very like pink, rosy skin, and just the kindest eyes, like amazing kind eyes. And when I saw him, my first thought was, are you God? And he kind of chuckled. He smiled and kind of chuckled. And he's like, no, son, I'm not God. And and what was amazing to me is he was sitting there talking to me, but not using his mouth. Like, he didn't need to move his mouth to talk. And I realized I didn't either. I could just think something, and he would answer it. So the next thing I thought was, well, you must be Jesus then. Even though I did think, you don't look like Jesus, but you must be Jesus then. And he kind of chuckled. He's like, no, son, I'm not Jesus. He said, but I'm here. I'm here to help you. I'm here to guide you. My name is Drake, and you can go wherever you want to go from here. You can go back to where you just came from, or you can come with me, and I can show you what's next in your journey. And to me, there was no question of where I was going. There's no way I was going to go back to that body where it was going through seizures, and they were like shoving all these syringes and IVs in the body and shoving hoses down the mouth, trying to get stuff mm-hmm. out of the stomach, like, you know, all that hardship. There was no possible way I wanted to go towards that, like, no possible way. So I said, you know what, there's no possible way I'm going down there, so I want to go with you. Wherever you're going to go, that's where I want to go. And he helped explain to me that this journey that he was going to take me on, that it wasn't just a journey from like earth to heaven. It was a journey from like earth thinking and earth living to a much higher living, a much higher consciousness, a much higher frequency. He used frequency because I've worked in construction and my whole, you know, almost my whole life. And I really understood frequency, especially with electricity. And he kept referencing frequency. He was going to help me raise my frequency so that I could get to a much higher state of being, so that I could be closer to God. And mm-hmm. he showed me that it wasn't going to be easy, but it was going to be way better than what I was seeing down on earth. And so we began our journey, an absolutely amazing journey that I essentially had to relearn how to be a good Christian, because I had grown up in a Christian culture that had, unfortunately, the culture, not the gospel, but the culture had instilled in me a lot of judgmental things, a lot of prejudices that I didn't even know I had, you know, towards maybe Islamic people or towards maybe some other religion. And I didn't realize I even had that. I felt, you know, growing up, I have two sisters that are adopted from Korea. And, you know, most of my friends growing up were all sorts of different races. So I thought, I'm the least prejudiced person I know. You know, I don't, you know, until I had any prejudice whatsoever. But one thing I noticed that I did, I actually was prejudiced towards prejudiced people. So even being prejudiced towards prejudiced people is actually prejudice. So he had to teach me that I had to learn how to be authentic, number one, and being authentic for me was meaning that I would be the same person, the same personality, no matter who I was with. And that wasn't me, because there was a version of Vinny or me that would be with my friends. There was a version of me that would be at the construction site building the house. I was a boss as well as a worker through the different projects. So there was a boss Vinny, there was a worker Vinny, there was a, you know, with my dad, I was a different personality, with my mom, I was a different personality. Now, was I way different? No, but I was different. And then, of course, on Sunday, you have your Sunday personality. So I go to church on Sunday, and I have my cleaned up behavior, you know, for Sundays. And what I realized through my guide, Drake, he helped me understand that we can't really grow or learn how to love here in this space until we can be that same being, no matter where we go. And he showed me that so many people here, they unfortunately don't feel they can be authentic until they're very old or very young. So when kids are really young, they're very authentic. And when people are in their, you know, 80s, they're very authentic. They don't pull any punches, but they don't sugarcoat. They're very authentic, right, with the way they live their mm-hmm. life. And he showed me that we need to be that way a whole life. instead of trying to impress or protect ourselves or others, that we need to be our authentic self no matter where we go, how we live, that, you know, come as it is, that we are who we are, and not try to be something that we're not. And that was the first thing. It was funny to me, though. I thought the first thing he would tell me was love. And he's like, no, because you can't really love others until you can be authentic and love yourself. And so he helped me learn that. And he helped me understand that my prejudices came from not loving myself. He helped me understand one of the coolest principles in the world. He called it the principle of the pointing finger. That when we you know, outwardly express, hey, I don't like that guy, or I don't like this lady, whatever, right? When we're pointing our finger mm-hmm. towards someone, we're pointing that same energy towards God, you know, up with our thumb. And then on the flip side, we're pointing three times that energy right back at ourselves. So when, you know, he showed me that it's a pretty amazing principle, that when we're sitting there judging someone else, we're judging God. And we're judging ourselves three times harder than we're judging that person outside of us. Inwardly, we are. And this principle of the pointing finger, man, I use it all the time, because whenever I'm pointing something out that I don't like, I'm like, whoa, whoa, whoa. I need to look inward. I got three times that problem inside.
Oh, yeah.
It's funny, you know, it's one of these things that it's part of our nature. But until somebody really points it out for us, we don't really know about it. And that was one of the principles that he brought up. And he helped me understand the power and influence of what we consume. And, you know, when I say consume, I don't mean just eating and drinking, you know, food and drink. I mean consuming with the eyes and consuming with the ears. You know, things we listen to, things we watch, we're consuming. And we would never just drive up to the dump where everybody dumps their garbage and just start eating stuff, would we? We would never do that.
Oh, no.
Well, not most of us. Maybe some people in this world, maybe. But most of us wouldn't just show up to the dump and just start shoveling stuff right off the ground into our mouth. But what's really crazy is sometimes we go to Netflix and we just start shoveling things in. Sometimes we go to HBO, we start shoveling things in. We don't select. We don't even do any type of checking to see what we're going to consume. But what we don't realize is when we consume something that's food, it only affects us for a few hours, maybe at the most for a few days. But when we consume something that's energetic, energy consumption, like watching a movie, watching you know, a show. That can affect us for a lifetime, maybe even an eternity. And so it's very important for us to understand that we are the creators of ourselves, that we can really, you know, allow or not allow anything we want within us. So it's up to us to really seek out positive content, positive things to consume, whether that's positive, you know, positive foods, like clean foods, good foods, whole foods, or positive energy, like positive music, positive movies. There's just so much junk out there. And this is not a judgment on anything that's out there. There's just a lot of content and media that doesn't build you. It tears you down.
Mm-hmm.
And there's so much junk, right?
Yeah, if you don't mind me saying, you brought up something very interesting about what we consume. It's something I've mentioned on different broadcasts we've had here, you know, especially that, like, reality TV and some things in social media, it might sound crazy, but, you know, it's some kind of way that influences marriages. You know, a wife might see, they have fun, they go to these exotic trips, they do this, they do that, why can't we do it? You know, so I think that was interesting how you brought that out. You know, the things that we consume, the things that we watch on TV, the things that we listen to. So I know a lot of people don't think that has anything to do with anything, but yes, it does. So I'm grateful that you brought that out. You know, we just got to be careful of what we consume on a daily basis.
Yeah, it's really important because, you know, especially with social media now, you're seeing all the good times for people. Nobody posts on social media the day that their kid, like, breaks this and makes their life harder, or they fail a test, or they lose a job necessarily. You don't see a lot of people posting the real life situation. What you see them posting is the vacation. You see them posting, hey, I've been working out for 3 years. I finally met this goal. Like, you're seeing all the peaks of the mountains, but there's a lot of valleys in between that led up to those peaks. And a lot of people think, oh, their whole life is up at that high time all the time. They're living this good life all the time. Nobody lives in that good space all the time. That's not living. That's not existing. Part of the learning that we have here is experiencing the valleys and experiencing the peaks both. And it's the valleys that lead to the peaks. But if all you're doing is looking for affirmation and looking for happiness through social media, you're only seeing the peak. You're only seeing the good side of everyone's life. Very, very rarely are you seeing the honest, vulnerable moments where people are learning through the harder times of life. And to do that, you have to actually step away from social media. You have to do this weird thing, like actually go talk face-to-face with people. And that's where you start realizing, oh, yeah, those are great vacation pictures on your Instagram, but I see that you have the same struggles I do. And, oh, yeah, I have my own vacation photos on Instagram, whatever, right? So you have to step away from the electronic social media and go back to the real social media, and that's human loving energy and getting near people and shaking hands, giving hugs, being with people. That's where you realize that we're not in this alone. We're not. There's so much loneliness nowadays because everyone is seeing all this success, all these great things for other people's lives, and you think, why doesn't my life look anything like that? And it's because they're not looking at the peaks. They're only looking at their own downtimes, the valleys, right? And you know, we as humans and as sons and daughters of God, we have the ability to love like God loves us. If we want, we can learn to love like that. And when we do, we're really building other people's lives as well as our own to be more on that high frequency, that high level, where we are having a lot more peaks and less valleys. There's no life without a valley, though. That's normal. Everybody has their valleys. Some of them are deeper than the others, but those valleys are part of life, all of them. Yeah. But, you know, another thing that I was taught, essentially from Drake, my guide, is that we have this very precious, very, very precious time every single day called the hour of power. And that's the first 30 minutes or the first hour when you wake up, or the last 30 minutes to 60 minutes before you go to bed. So these two windows of our day, before we, you know, right before we go to bed and right when we wake up, this is the hour of power. And whatever we put in this hour, that's what we are currently worshiping. And, you know, whether we say we're Christians, whether we say we're Buddhists or Hindus or Muslims or Jews, no matter what we say we worship, who we truly worship is who we are filling up our hour of power with. So if we fill up our hour of power with Instagram, Facebook, emails, work, that kind of thing, we are worshiping that. We are not worshiping God. The only way to really get back on track with God, build that relationship, is use that time as a precious time. Connect to scripture, connect to whatever your faith scripture is, connect to that scripture, seek out the word of God, seek out positive content. You can go to YouTube and put motivational video, and you can see so many good videos there, so many. And that way you're building into the God energy, the good energy, right? And you can actually start bringing God back into your life. And as you do this, what's amazing about it is a lot of the sadness starts to go away. A lot of the emptiness starts to go away, because what's building that emptiness is all this social media, all this false happiness. It's not real happiness. Real happiness starts inside. And, you know, the most holy temple of all temples is
these two temples on your head. What goes on inside here is more important than anything outside. And so we need to be very, very careful what we allow inside the holy temple. Because if we go up to that garbage dump and we just start shoveling things in the eyes, shoveling things in the ears, shoveling things in the mouth, what's going to happen is it's going to soil the temple here. And then we're going to think, why are we so sad? Why do I feel so empty? Why do I feel like there's no purpose to life? It's because we filled ourselves with garbage. That's why there is no purpose. And, you know, you can take a sack of potatoes and fill it with anything you want. But when you fill it with good, you feel good. When you fill it with good things, you feel good. You get good results out of your life. And this is one of those things that, you know, growing up, being raised Christian, I thought I knew all this, but I guess I didn't. I kind of knew it, but I didn't. You know, growing up when I was really little, almost everybody I knew, they would study the scriptures. As soon as they wake up, they would have family prayer. And then before they go to bed, they'd have another prayer. They'd do some more scripture study. And that was how I was raised. And pretty much everybody in my community, most kids, no matter what kind of Christian church they went to, that's kind of how they all lived. And we've moved away from that. Now, do we have to go out and physically grab a Bible and study that? Not necessarily, because we have so much good stuff, good technology, like the Bible app. You know, so many different Bible apps that we have out there. There's so many positive content that we can really seek out, and we can connect to God, connect to our Creator there. And that our power, that can really revolutionize people's lives if they would just understand. You know, if there's anything that I could help people understand to make sure they treat that hour of power as a precious, sacred thing and don't allow the garbage dump in that area specifically. You know, if you're going to go to the garbage dump, go at lunchtime or go, you know, maybe dinner or whatever, but don't do it in your hour of power, because make sure that worship space is dedicated for God, for sacred energy. And if we could all kind of embolden and understand that and strengthen that principle in our lives, we can fundamentally change how we feel every day when we wake up and how we feel every night when we go to bed. And we can continually make an impact with ourselves doing that. And what's really beautiful about it is as we start honoring our hour of power, people notice. They notice the change, and they start to ask, what are you doing different? Why do you look different? Why do you act different? Why did you get that better job that you've always wanted? You know, things like these this happen when we're honoring our hour of power. Because, you know, if we make God a part of our life, God becomes a part of our life. Kind of simple, but very impactful. And that was one of the biggest takeaways I had from the whole experience. But I did, you know, I had to learn all these principles. I ended up learning about 10 major principles that I had to get through to actually get to heaven. And finally, I got up there. I actually got up there to this heaven space, this beautiful place that is for all of us if we want to go there. And to even discuss just the beauty of the grass, I literally could talk for probably 8 to 10 hours just about the grass. I'm not kidding. This is no exaggeration. The grass alone, one of the first things I noticed was there in heaven, you know, here we experience grass because the sun, which is outside of us, is shining light onto the grass, right? But there,
yes, sir,
the light's coming from inside the grass. So the light's coming from inside the trees and inside the flowers and inside the other beings that are near you. Literally everything emits light there. That because it's coming from the objects themselves, not from an outward sun, it's completely different. The colors are just absolutely vibrant. Just the greens alone in just the grass, millions and millions of different greens that we don't have even on this planet, in just the grass. And the grass itself, as I touched down and actually felt it on my toes, on my feet, I could actually feel that there was God there, that God was there literally in the grass, in the grass itself. You could connect to God. you could feel this consciousness, this loving consciousness of God there. And you could feel that this grass literally loved you. No matter whether you believe you deserved it or not, you felt that you felt this love coming through that grass. And again, this is just grass, but I'm telling you, the grass had a smell, it had a sound, it had like a, it sounded like, it sounded kind of like, almost like a very, very beautiful, like crystal violin, very lightly playing a tone or a music, and that was actually coming off of the grass. And just to be even near it and touch it, you could actually taste the grass, and it had just this beautiful aroma and flavor, and just the whole experience there was like absolutely life-changing. Like, we have no idea how much love is out there for us that's built around this network of the third dimension where we're living. This network of love that's running all this is just so, so profound and so amazing and so big. We have no idea how big God is. God is so great. God is so amazing. Like, we have no idea. We get these little inklings when we see a beautiful sunset, or we look at our child or our grandchild, and we see and feel how much we love them. And that's just a little eyelash to this huge, you know, ocean of love that we get to feel from God when we get to heaven. And it's an absolutely beautiful thing that, you know, I didn't feel I deserved the love I got. I really didn't. I know I didn't. I deserve some love, but not as much as I was being given. And I realized that, you know, that the love of God comes through work and grace so much, both that grace really carries you much further than you deserve to go. And you get so much, even when you don't necessarily deserve it. And, you know, I got to experience that amazing grass, and then I got to experience some flowers and some water and just the cleansing of the water. It would want, like, you would ask you as you felt the water, it would ask you, do you want me to come cleanse you? And it would come up on you and cleanse you. You wouldn't get wet, but you'd feel the coolness and the cleansing power of this water. And, you know, again, I could talk for hours and hours on just heaven and space, but I did see this amazing, beautiful building. It looked like a big 4 or 5 story white marble building. And it was, I could tell it was made out of one solid piece of marble, the entire building. And the building had all of these like classrooms, or these special rooms like classrooms, where souls and spirits could go in, but they would have to have the right love energy to get in the room. If they didn't, there would be no passageway for them. So they would go to another room, and it was just very beautiful. It was shown to me, it was like a university where there wasn't a room for everybody, but there was a room for you. Like, there was like one person couldn't go into every room, but at the same time, there was room specifically exactly what you needed. And so we go there to get what we need and to get ready for what's next. And there's, you know, life is eternal. I always thought heaven was this big waiting room of family and friends and church members that you go up there, it's just a big party, and we're all going to hang out for eternity. It's not like that. It's gorgeous. It's beautiful. But what's funny is even the heaven I was shown, it's not the end-all place you go. It's where you go to get what you need for what's next. And what's next is more growth. And you know, God wants us to constantly be growing and learning, but we also get to grow and learn with our families and be with our loved ones. But it's not like this big cloud room that we're all just chilling in, you know? I don't know why, but that's kind of what I thought heaven was before I died. Before I saw real heaven. And another thing I've shown, though, is, you know, when we really follow God, even if we're in a different religion, when we really connect to our Creator with the right faith and the right energy, we get the exact heaven that we need. We get the exact heaven we need. It's literally, essentially, energetically built for us, catered for us, and we get to have those who we want with us in that experience to as many generations as we want, you know? It's just a beautiful thing how God really has created this system that gives us our own customized path that's specific just for us. And every single one of us has that. That's the beautiful, amazing thing. Like, we really get the exact thing we need because all of us don't get the same out of this life. You know, we don't. We get certain things, some of us, and others don't, and then others get other things that we don't. And so when we get to heaven, God knows there's still some more learning and growth and beautiful things that are going to happen. So we get to have that stuff happen. It's really an amazing thing. And as this is all happening, my guide Drake, who got me through this whole process, got me to heaven, I hear him tell me, he says, Vinny, this is going to be really hard, but it's going to be worth it. And as he says that, he hugs me. And as he's hugging me, it's very different because we don't have necessarily physical bodies there, but we are physical there. And in fact, I would even be pressured to say that we're more physical there than we are here. Because here is such a low density state. There's such a high density state or high frequency state. But what ended up happening was my guide, he came together and gave me this hug. And as we hugged, this beautiful symbiotic energy happened where we could feel God's love, like very, very strong and resonating between the two of us. And it still to this day is the most beautiful thing I've ever experienced in my life, where I really felt how much God loved me with that hug. And I still feel so unworthy to that hug because that love is so much stronger than we could ever deserve. Even if we're Mother Teresa and we've done everything perfect our whole life and done so much good, we still don't deserve that much love, but we get it. We get it through that grace, that amazing grace. And as he was giving me that hug, I actually started to hear a prayer that was being given to my physical body. Now, mind you, at this point in my experience, I was actually in a coma for 3 days. So while I was brain dead, I literally had, you know, less than 15% brain activity going on, very limited brain activity whatsoever. They thought I was essentially going to be in a coma for my whole life. That was for 3 straight days I had that. So here I am in heaven at the end of the third day, and I'm hearing this special prayer being given, this special blessing being given to my body, and it was being given to my body by my brother. And my brother, I didn't realize, loved me so much. I really didn't realize that. Me and him were kind of at odds with each other. We're 2 years apart, so we were always in competition on everything our whole life. And to feel this supreme love from my brother, it essentially took my agency away from me, and it forced me back to my body. And at this point, you know, I literally went from straight from heaven to waking up in a hospital with just tubes coming out of everywhere. You know, if you look on the back of my book, one of the pictures there is of me on life support while I was in that coma. And I literally have tubes coming out of the mouth, coming out of, you know, I had catheters in. I had all sorts of diodes on my head, on my chest, under my arms, on my fingers. I had all these, you know, things on me. And as soon as I woke up, I just pulled them all off, all of them. Even the tube that was in my nose, I had a tube in my mouth. I pulled that out. I pulled everything out of me, including the catheter. I couldn't take what was, you know, coming back to the physical body was very, very hard because in spirit, we are much larger. I would say we're 3 to 4 times larger in spirit than we are in the physical form. So, you know, in spirit form, we're very, very big energy. And to be kind of packed back in this sardine box of a human body. Now, mind you, I'm a big guy, but I'm telling you, like, who we really are is much bigger than this physical body we exist in. I mean, we're all, you know, we're all bigger than basketball players, essentially, you know, in the energy, in the spirit world. And so coming back to this physical body was very hard for me. I took
took everything off of me, including the robe that was the gown that was on me. I couldn't have anything touching me. And I just stood there for a moment, just standing there in the hospital room, away from the bed, nothing touching me. And I just took a few deep breaths. And as I did, I realized that, you know, I was so claustrophobic. But what's weird is at this moment, I had forgotten my whole experience. I the last thing that I could remember right when I woke up was going to my buddy's house before we even took the supplement. So, you know, it was very hard right then because I felt very depressed. I didn't know why. I felt very claustrophobic. I didn't know why. And just 2 days later, after getting out of the hospital, I had my sister take me to dinner, and she asked me, she said, "Hey," she said, "Vinny," actually she called me Todd, so that's my middle name. She's like, "Todd, hey, I know you died, and you know you were dead, right?" And I said, "Yeah." And I was dead. Everybody said I was a miracle boy. And she goes, "Well, did you have an out-of-body experience?" And I said no. Or as I went to go say no, literally my whole experience started to come out of me. And it was as if the whole thing got back uncovered, where all of a sudden I remembered all of it. And it all remembered instantly, just in the second she asked me that. But I literally went to go say no, and as I went to say the word no, as I went to form those words, the whole experience started to come out of me. And that's how the experience happened. Now, fast forward later, you know, seven months later, after my death experience, I actually found out who Drake was, who he really was in this life, and how he was related to me. And I had no idea he was my great-great-great-grandfather on my grandmother's side. So it was just a beautiful experience. And since then, I've had many confirmations to the experience of things that I learned and things that I picked up from the experience that helped confirm to me that I wasn't crazy. Because I did think I was crazy right in the first, you know, in the very beginning, I thought, hey, I'm, you know, must be crazy having this kind of experience happen to me. I must have made it up. And there's been too many times, too many synchronicities, too many things that confirmed there was no possible way for me to know, you know, prior to the experience. And now I knew after the experience. And so it's been a journey. I'm telling you, it's been a journey, but so is this life. That's what it's all about. That's my story. That's my experience.
Family reunion, yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. And still to this day, I can feel Drake's love. I can really feel it when I pray, when I meditate. I can really still feel his love so strong. And it's a beautiful relationship I have with him.
Yeah, that's something, you know, the testimonies I hear about people going to heaven, you pretty much saying the same thing. You talk about the colors, talk about the grass, the water. So it's just... that's just something to, you know, look forward to, you know, for us to, you know, live the life on this side so we can make it there to, you know, experience those things.
Yeah.
You just saw just a fraction, so ain't, you know, telling what else is, you know,
oh,
what
yeah,
you can see there.
There's so much more I could go over, and even to put it in the book.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, it takes a couple of hours to read the book, but the book pretty much captures the whole thing. And you know, we have it on Amazon. It's called The Light After Death, and you can even go to the website, The Light After Death, and see it there. We have that, a lot of kind of extra material, too, for the story of, you know, how I met my wife and all of that, too, in there, which is really cool. Because I met my wife, like, just a couple months after my experience, which is, she's my earth angel. She's what keeps me here. So otherwise, I'd be back in heaven by now.
Oh, yeah. I'll tell you this, I truly enjoyed you. I enjoyed everything I heard, the revelations that you got while you were in heaven. So hopefully anybody that's listening to this now or who may be listening to it later on, I really hope you got something out of it. I know I have, especially that, what's that, hour power?
The hour
the 30
power,
minutes
yeah.
In, yeah.
The power, the
yeah,
power
that, that's
hour
definitely.
The hour of power, yeah.
Yes, yeah, sir. So I hope y'all, anybody listening, after every broadcast, I just hope y'all got something out of it, especially this one.
I hope y'all was able to take notes, go back and play it on YouTube, and hopefully it'll be life changing for you.
And if you can get
your book on Amazon, you said?
Yeah, you can get it on Amazon. It's called The Light After Death. Or you can also go to our website and get it through Amazon, through our website, too. That's thelightafterdeath.com. Yeah.
All right, yeah. Well, y'all go check it out. But Mr. Coleman, I really do appreciate you taking the time to come on this broadcast and share your story. I really do appreciate it. I enjoyed it, and I just can't thank you enough for taking the time out to share your story with us.
Thank you so much for having me on. Just know that God's out there. God loves every single one of us, and he's reaching out to us. It's up to us to reach back to God and get that connection. He's there for all of us.
That's right. All right. All right, everybody, I really do appreciate y'all for tuning in to the Raw Spiel. And until next time, God bless you all. Take care. If you only trust him, he'll praise your feet.